All right, welcome back now. Yes, it's 30 minutes gone past 4. And this is Hard Facts right here on 92.3 Nigeria Info. My name is Constance Mega. Okay, so yeah, we'll be talking about not necessarily the International Day of Peace, but hey, the conversation for this hour is in line with the International Day of Peace. It was actually last week, Thursday, that the world celebrated that day, International Day of Peace. And in line with the theme for this year, which was Actions for Peace, Our Ambition for the Global Goals. Let's look at how the different government policies are actions that could bring about peace in the country, or maybe terminate the existing peace. You know, usually when we're talking about government and we're talking about developments, right, people usually would look at one aspect of governance. They're looking at the personalities who are there as leaders and those other things that come with the office they occupy, the negative aspect mostly, corruption. So that's usually what people talk about. But then, beyond that, all right, of course, that is an aspect that could either foster peace or terminate the peace that is already existing. If the people in government are not being transparent with their method of governance, if there is corruption, whether low-level, high-level, middle-level corruption. I heard high-level corruption last week. I was listening to a radio station and some people said that. Anyway, so yeah. I'm just talking about one aspect, all right, when it comes to governance and what could foster peace in a country. I mean, in a country like Nigeria, before now, when I started the show, I was introducing the topic, I talked about some aspects of our economy that is actually really being affected when it comes to insecurity or conflicts, things that are not bringing peace to the lives of the people. Yes, this morning it was in the news. It was even one of the big stories I took. The students who were kidnapped, some of them have been whether released or rescued, whichever way, they're back home, some of them though. So the issue of kidnapping is an aspect that if we really look at what could be causing kidnapping, because if you want to talk about things that foster peace, you must definitely also look at the root causes of some of the conflicts that we see. So talking about kidnapping, just one aspect, kidnapping. If you look at it, you could find things like poverty. Yeah. And so you now start talking about economic development, you know, those kind of policies that perhaps should rather promote economic growth. We're talking job creation, poverty reduction. Sometimes in Nigeria, when we hear poverty, the next thing is alleviation. Poverty alleviation, you know, those kind of stuff. Those kind of things that could get people engaged legally, young people especially. And so they would look away from crime. So what else would you also bring up when you're talking about kidnapping? How to ensure that that's part of conflict is stopped. Okay, maybe not necessarily stopped, but reduced drastically. I mean, if we're being realistic, you can't say stopped. You can actually say reduced drastically, all right? Yeah, it's possible to do that. Another thing now would be education. Yeah, some of those people who venture into crime, who decide to, well, let's kidnap people for ransom, some of them are not educated. Some of them started and they were not able to finish. It was also in the news earlier on where ASUU President Emmanuel Osodeke was saying, giving a warning, sort of, that if this tuition hike or hike in school fees that the federal universities have chosen to adopt, if it continues, we will have about 50% or more of the students drop out. Oh, darling, you and I know what that is going to bring about. There are people who want to make that money by any means. They're not going to care whose life is going to be on the line, even theirs, they will not care. Because if they can't continue with their education, then they will have to still survive, right? And some people would want to continue with education. They wouldn't want to drop out. But the means to get the education, that will be the problem now. Getting the money to fund the education becomes an issue. So if the government does not have strong policies that would support education and perhaps even awareness programs that promote tolerance, understanding, and so many other things, then we are going to have a problem, or more problems than we already do have. And now, talking about, I already mentioned awareness programs. That brings us to another aspect of education, awareness. Because we're talking about the root causes of, what's it called now, conflicts. Yeah, remember the topic actually is government policies, a tool for fostering peace in the country. This, my topic, really sounds like a project topic. Oh my goodness. Anyway, back to what I was saying. So coming to awareness, right? That's another angle to education. That's another level. How do people get to understand that, hey, we can all disagree over something and still be united? I may not agree with what you believe in, whether your cultural practice, your religious practice, your political affiliation, I may not agree. But that doesn't mean we have to fight. We can still live peacefully with our different beliefs, not agreeing. But then there is still peace amongst us. People need to be made aware of how to go about civic engagement. People need to be made aware of how to be tolerant of the other person, of the other group, of the other group person, yeah. People need that every time. It needs to be ongoing. Because if we wait for these things until perhaps during elections, yeah, I mean, we just came out from one, we're still on it. Supreme Court, hello, and tribunals giving out their rulings these days. But it seems like it's during elections that we start hearing all those things about be tolerant, yeah? Don't engage in this. Don't carry ballot box. Don't fight one another. Let's live together as one. And oh yeah, the next time we're going to hear that, it's going to be Independence Day. Yeah, we'll start hearing songs like that as well. So we need more of those kind of stuff if we will help peace to thrive. I was about to say if we will maintain peace, but then it just occurred to me that we might not necessarily have to maintain it at the level we have it. We might just need to help it grow, because what we have is not enough. No, the level at which we are going in the country right now, it's not enough. River State, one of the Niger Delta states, oil producing states, we know the level of unrest that is here. Or you might live in Port Harcourt, where seemingly everything is good and fine, and nobody's pursuing you. But there are communities in the same River State where people can't even go back home, because boys have taken to criminality. Why? No jobs for them. And some of them are actually, you know, not being truthful to themselves. They're choosing not to work. But they also look at the environment where they live, and it's like they're not seeing the things they expect. Some of them perhaps may have sat down to, you know, get some level of education on how much oil do we actually produce from this place. So if we produce this level of oil, so how much should be coming to this, our community, at least? So what should our community look like, at least? And then they are looking and they're not seeing that. Oh, young people and their hot blood. Some of them just get mad. And they feel like the elders in the village are not talking. So they would rather pursue everybody. I'm not making a case for anybody, but then I'm just outlining some of the root causes of some of the conflicts that we experience in Nigeria. But back to the question I have for you. Is there any particular government policy that you think is contributing more to peace in Nigeria? Could there be an aspect of what the government has put in place that you feel this one is the one that is actually helping better? If they would just continue in this light, then we would get better by the day. And the second question is, how else can government policies tackle the root causes of conflicts in Nigeria? I'll mention some of the root causes. You might as well add to that. All right, so do well to send me a message via WhatsApp to 0809-030-6416. 0809-030-6416. Well, of course, when it comes to making policies, all right, that would contribute to peace, one of the things that that would really help is implementation. Because if we have policies, because we actually do, if we have policies, just like sometimes people will say, oh, the law is not working, the judiciary system is blah, blah, blah. It's implementation that is usually the problem. Monitoring, adaptation. So some of the challenges in Nigeria. I'll be right back though.
And now, hard facts on 92.3 Nigeria Info.
All right, welcome back now. 29 minutes gone past 4. And yeah, we're still talking government policies as a tool for peace in Nigeria. And so let's just find out, what exactly does policy mean, right? Because sometimes when we hear policy, 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 sometimes we hear a word for a long time, too many times, and you even forget the exact meaning of, you know, that particular word. So simply, it's a set of ideas or a plan of what to do in particular situations that has been agreed to officially. Could be by a group of people, a business organization, a government, if, you know, just like we're discussing right now, or perhaps a political party. So it's more like a guideline. This is more like, okay, this is how we're going to run this. This is how we're going to run that for good outcomes. Definitely for a good outcome. All right. So right now, joining me for the conversation we're having is a policy analyst. I told you before now. Mr. Tija Bolton Akpan of Policy Alert. Good evening, sir. And welcome to Hard Facts.
Nice to be here again.
Yeah, sure. All right, so let's start off this way. First of all, I've actually outlined some of the, you know, root causes of conflicts in Nigeria and all that. But what would you say, of course, Nigeria, the government has a lot of policies for different aspects of the economy. All right, but what would you say is the biggest issue with seeing those policies come to light and actually bring about the needed results in the country?
Thank you so much. I think that we do not have the war, we do not suffer from a want of policies in Nigeria. More often than not, what we see is that there are actually policy frameworks in place, but implementation is where the tire usually meets the road. And oftentimes find gaps in implementation. For one thing, it is very rare and far between that you find a government that is very committed to its own policies. So you get to see every now and then government actually putting in place very elaborate and ambitious policy frameworks, right? But they do not actually match those frameworks with action. You know, sometimes it is not just about writing these policies on paper. A policy, you know, a law could be a policy. We have a lot of laws, legislation at different levels of government, national assembly, the state, even at the local government level, you have laws and, you know, and frameworks like that. You also have policies that are properly so-called, which are, you know, ideas on how things should be done within a particular context during a particular time and in certain specific, you know, situations. So these are there in almost every aspect of our national life. Whether you want to refer to environment, we have policies on environmental impact assessment, we have laws, the Environmental Impact Assessment Act, we have laws on climate change, for instance. You know, we have laws in different aspects on oil spill and so on. These are there. There are regulations there. These are all policies. If you go to agriculture, we have the gamut of laws and, you know, policies. You go to transportation, the same thing. Aviation, the same thing. You go to health. I mean, we have the National Health Act and so on. So policies are not really the problem. The laws are not really the problem. Regulations, that's not a problem. What usually becomes a challenge for Nigeria is matching those policies with enough resourcing. So that's why I say putting your money where your mouth is. Where the policy is the mouth now, how much are you investing in ensuring that that policy actually, you know, delivers the needed development outcome? So you go to the budget, for instance, which in itself is a policy. In fact, the budget is the most important policy document, right? How much are you putting in the budget to ensure that, you know, this desired policy outcome comes to pass? When you say that this is your policy priority and you do not budget to match that priority, then it shows that your commitment is just a lip service. So this is what we've been having in Nigeria over time, and it's not just about a particular administration. We've had successive governments from the military era to the current democratic dispensation. We've had so much paperwork commitment, you know, to development outcomes that do not translate, you know, to resourcing, to financing, and even to implementation. The other thing is also enforcement. So when you make policies and you don't enforce, you say, okay, when someone does this, this is what is going to happen. And then someone does it the first time, nothing happens. They do it a second time, nothing happens. They do it even a third time, nothing happens. So it becomes a norm that breaking that particular law or violating that policy becomes a subculture or a norm. And we have seen in so many policy domains in Nigeria, we have seen things going on as if there were no policies or no laws or no regulations. That's because enforcement is very weak. So financing of our policies and enforcement of these policies is a very serious weakness that we have to deal with. I'm talking about policies becoming, you don't just make policies for its own sake. Policy is supposed to contribute to development.
Yeah.
So if these policies are not financed, they are not properly resourced, and they are not properly enforced, then they cannot translate to development outcomes.
So, since you already mentioned the fact that it's not just making policies, but they have to be policies that bring about the needed change, right? It brings me now to the recent one where the government chose to stop subsidy payments, you know, for petrol, and we're all seeing the resultant effect of that. All right. So now, here's what I want to know: when it comes to implementing policies, which one takes precedence? Is it the people or the economy? I don't even know how to differentiate this, but I hope you get what
I mean.
That's
fine. I mean, yes, I get your point. So this has been that quandary between the people and economic growth has been a very serious debacle in economic conversation over the past century, and for good reason, because the economy exists for the people, right?
Yeah.
Now, if you want the economy to grow, okay, the people have to be front and center of your policy decision making. You do not just grow the economy and then you have sharp spiking upward. It shows that there is growth. And like we say in development parlance, that growth does not lift all boats. That is to say, you have a wave, right?
Mm.
You know, you have a wave on the sea, but that wave, some of the boats are up on the crest of the wave, while some of the boats are buried in the trough of the wave. That means they are at risk of sinking. So in economic terms, you say that it does not lift all boats. So some of the policies that have been made have not been able to lift all the boats, as it were, all citizens. And, you know, we're talking about the sustainable development goals, which is the rallying cry of development across the world from 2015 to 2030.
Yeah.
The global goals, a payoff line for the global goals is leaving no one behind. The idea is that development is going to be all-inclusive, carrying every segment of the society along in such a way that you do not take decisions about a particular constituency without that constituency being front and center of that decision-making process. So what we have seen in the specific instance you have cited is that decisions were made without bringing the ordinary citizens of Nigeria who are the receiving end into the decision-making room. And that's the reason for the entire confusion we've seen in the course of the saga. So these were the people who are feeling the bite, you know, of the fear price. And over the years, the corruption in that sector has bitten, you know, so deep into Nigeria's public resources. You know, the coffers have been more like empty, you know, in the bid to pay for a subsidy that nobody knows whether it exists or not. And here we are talking about removing it or not removing it. So the long and short of this is that citizens should be at the center of economic decision making, and growth should not just be growth of the economy for its own sake. It should be growth that is development-oriented.
Yeah. Oh my goodness, that happened. All right, I'm going to have to reconnect with Mr. Atija. But then, let's hear from you, all right? But, you know, with the focus now on the Niger Delta, I mean, that's where we are, right? This is River State. So let's come back home. Although our conversation has been centered around the entire country as a whole, but let's bring it home. And that's why I want you to tell me, from the moves that government has made so far, maybe not just this year, perhaps the new government, and the ones they've done in the past, which would you say is a particular policy that is contributing more to peace in Nigeria? Now, somebody might call and say, nothing. They're not in anything that is contributing to any peace. Hey, come on. Think about it. There has to be something, all right? In all our doubts, in all our unbelief, okay, maybe not unbelief, but, you know, so in all of that mindset that nothing is working, there has to be something. Maybe it's something that the government, if you look at government and you're not thinking federal government, whenever you hear the word government, then you could see that, okay, there's actually something that is working. So it could be the government in your local government area. Now you get what I'm saying. So it could be something that your local government is doing. It could be something that your local government has put in place, and that is helping to contribute to peace in your local government area. It could be something the state government has done over time, and you could say of a truth, yeah, even though this particular policy is not all that, but it is contributing so much to the peace that we are experiencing, the level of peace we are experiencing here in this area. All right. So what particular policy would you say is contributing more to peace in our environment today? Don't look so far. It might be the palliatives that is dousing tension. It could be any other thing. But I want to hear from you. And then the second one is, how can government policies tackle the root causes of conflicts in Nigeria? Now, when you hear conflicts, don't just think fighting. No. Criminality, that's part of it. Those other agitations that people have, that they may not necessarily be carrying guns and cutlasses and, you know, hitting the streets to express, it's also a conflict of some sort. Those agitations of, oh, we need to find our way, everybody go their way. So how can government policies, perhaps you could give an example of a particular government aspect of the economy, and you say, if the government has a policy that does this in the education sector, or does this in the health sector, it will help to tackle this particular problem in that sector. All right, so let's hear from you. How can government policies tackle the root causes of conflicts in Nigeria? All right, the numbers to call are 0817-923-0002 or 0817-923-0007. I'm also taking messages on WhatsApp and of course on Facebook, but hey, for WhatsApp now is 0809-030-6416. Then for Facebook, head on there, it's Nigeria Info 92.3 PH. Let's hear from you. And please do remember, when you call in, we're having a civil conversation. We're discussing peace. So be peaceful in your conversation, in your comments. Thank you. Hello, I am Braid.
Yes, thank you very much. I think for me, let me narrow it down to River State. Yes, when you look at the insecurity issue, come to 2007, we have a very serious crisis insecurity in River State. But when the Rotimi-Chibike Amaechi government comes to power, they handle it headlong. They create jobs for the youth. If you look, Rotimi Amaechi did not carry guns to go and fight. He did not arrest any Israel Majesty. He tried to create jobs. We create an enabling ground for education. He create an enabling ground for health. You look at it that drastically the insecurity reduced in every sector. And also, he create an enabling ground for scholarship. It creates jobs, different areas. Look at our USFDA, River State Road Management Authority, and other aspects, Sendai Farm, Banana Plantation, Buguma Peace Farm. It all engaged the citizens of the state. And you see, within that period, insecurity, corruption, terrorism reduced. So for me, the government should look at this area and do something meaningful.
All right. Oh, apologies. I am Braid. I actually didn't know he was still saying something. Thank you very much for calling, though. I've reconnected with Mr. Tija. Mr. Tija, please hold on. Let's hear from God Wills. He's calling from Waterlines. Hi, Mr. God Wills.
Good evening, Constance.
Good evening, sir.
Okay, I really am enjoying your conversation.
Thank you.
And there's an aspect of the root cause of this problem that I actually want to highlight on. I know we've had lots of successive governments that have failed the citizens. But unfortunately, the level where we are now, or the stage where we are now, is the stage where citizens are actually also doing more harm to fellow citizens in the process of government, even to any level of sincerity they want to implement any policy. So we talk about, for instance, government says, okay, there's much poverty in the land, we want to reel out palliatives and all that. Of course, they will have to do it at certain levels with involvement of ordinary citizens. But the unfortunate truth is that today, you see that everybody wants to take advantage of everybody. every policy of government that is rolled out, people at different levels want to sabotage it for their own selfish reasons. So we've gotten to that bad situation where, for instance, I'm from a particular community. I know if this thing comes to my community, it's going to benefit the ordinary people in my community. I will siphon it for my own self and neglect every person who is from my community. And I'll watch them suffer and die. And tomorrow I'll come out and join to say government is not doing enough. So I really feel so bad, because it's really a very pathetic situation where Nigerians have given up on even being our brother's keeper. No matter how well or how bad a government is, we need to look out for each other.
Okay.
And unfortunately, that is not what is happening. We have bad government at various levels, but the little things they give out, people still siphon it to punish fellow citizens the more. And for me, that is the biggest problem we are having today. I would really need to look at how we can change and look out for each other. Because by and large, it will still come back to affect everybody if this country continues to go the way it's going today. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much for calling God's Will. Mr. Tija. Hello.
Hello, Constance. I'm here with you.
Okay. So, can I even remember what you were saying before you were cut off like that? Do you remember what we were discussing? I think maybe you rounded up, though, but I would like to look at something else. Can you hear me?
Right. Yes, I can hear you.
Okay, so I just want us to move on. I would like to look at another aspect when it comes to fostering peace, right, in the country. Now, over the years, we've seen... Okay, you were saying something about the budget. That's true. And that's why I'm on this right now. So over the years, we've seen the government allocate so much to the defense and security sector as against something like education, health, all right? And then there's been that debate over the years about how much the government earmarks to the education sector in the budgets. And this past administration earmarked much more than before for the 2023 budgets, right? For the education sector. I think 1.79 trillion naira, that's what was earmarked for the 2023 budget. Even though it's still not up to the, should I say, global standard of, you know, what UNESCO is recommending. But then, when it comes to seeking out, ensuring that there is peace in a country, right? Now, one of the root causes of insecurity is even illiteracy. When people are not educated, they tend to agree to follow the way of criminality. Now, would you say, or would you, I just want to know what you think though, giving more attention to defense and security than education, is it helping out? Is it the best way? So is the defense sector much more important than the education sector? That's what I'm looking at.
All right, thank you. So let's even use the 2023 budget as, you know, as an indicator of these priorities, right?
Yeah.
So we had about 21 trillion for 2023 fiscal year, right?
Yeah, 20.5.
No, 20.5 trillion, yeah. So, right? Now, if you check what has gone into the education sector, right? You had 1.08 trillion was allocated to the education sector. But
we
had 2.9 trillion, almost 3 trillion, about three times that amount went to defense and security. This tells you the kind of priorities that our government has. The conception of security, the conception of peace building, is actually a hardware. The idea around peace and security is focused around hardware to the detriment of the software dimensions of peace and security.
this is not just about, you know, security is not just about using guns, you know, enforcing the peace is not just about ensuring that, you know, we have security vehicles stationed at different street corners. That is part of it, but it is just a very, very small part of it. The bigger side of security has to do with building, you know, human capacity, ensuring that human security is protected. Human security has to do with dimensions such as health, has to do with dimensions such as education, has to do with dimensions such as community empowerment, and so on. Livelihood, that is human security, right? If you do not deal with human security at its very core, then you are creating a physical security risk. That is where issues of, you know, fragility, issues of conflict, and insecurity begins to go out of hand. Most of the time when you hear about militancy, for instance, in the Niger Delta, it is because the human security issue, some of the contract clauses in the relationship between these companies and the communities, or the Nigerian state and the communities on the other hand, have not been kept to. The government has refused to live up to those expectations. And sometimes these people are pushed to the wall and they have no option but to fight or kick back. And that's where you hear that there is, you know, a breakdown of the peace, a breakdown of law and order. So oftentimes, insecurity issues that border on hardware are as a result of the failure of the software dimension of security. And so human security has to be tackled, you know, as, you know, a prerequisite for ensuring that peace and security is guaranteed in the society. Mm-hmm. If you look at the Sustainable Development Goals, for instance, there is the SDG 16, right? There is a particular sustainable goal that focuses on promoting peaceful and inclusive societies. That's SDG 16. But if you go to the group, the target of that goal, it breaks it down to help you know that this is not just about the hardware of peace, right? It is more about the software. So it talks about things like ensuring effective, accountable, and inclusive institutions. Institutions that put citizens at the center, like you asked previously.
Yeah, okay, right? Hold on, Mr. Atija. We have to go on a commercial break, and we'll be back.
Stay with us, Nigeria Info. We'll be back.
Okay, we're back now and we're almost out of time. But just to wrap up now, Mr. Tija, so you were talking about the SDGs and you were talking about SDG 16, which is about promoting peaceful and inclusive society for sustainable development. All right, so perhaps in one sentence, right, as we wrap up the conversation now, how can government policies tackle the root causes of conflicts in Nigeria?
Right. So government policies have an important role to play in this. For one, policies have to be open so that citizens can have more trust in government.
All right.
That can contribute to building peace in society. So transparency is important. Accountability is important.
All right.
Participation and inclusiveness is important, right? Mm. So citizens have to be brought into the decision-making space.